Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to the program. I'm Kevin Rutherford, your host. Lisa is your producer and call screener. If you're listening online and you want to join us with a question, a comment, or a topic, you can dial the show from your phone. You'll be able to listen on your phone. You'll also be able to join in. Phone number 347-884-8327. If you're on your phone listening, you've got a topic, a question, whatever it is you want to talk about, press 1. At any time, and Lisa will get to your call and screen your call, and I'll get to your question. Phone lines are wide open right now, so feel free to jump in. I'm open with rates, and then we'll get to whatever it is you want to talk about. Again, if you're listening online, that phone number to join us, 347-884-8327. If you're on the line, press 1. We'll get right to your... All right. Some really good news on rates. And again, this really strong numbers. The Market Demand Index, this is the newsletter that I watch every week. The index measures relative truck demand. That means it's measuring the available loads against the available trucks. So the more loads we have, the higher the index can go. The less trucks we have, the higher the index can go, or it could be both, more freight, less trucks, or it could be more freight and more trucks. As long as the freight goes up higher than the number of available trucks, the index will go up. The higher the number on the index, the better it is for us, the people who own. And if you were listening to the show last week, I talked about kind of crossing that magic number being 7. And we just got a little above it last week at 7.01. And that magic number is kind of the equilibrium or the tipping point that any time we're above 1, we have the negotiating strength falls in the favor of the carriers, the truck owners. Now, just being above it for .01 for a week is definitely good news, and we're heading in the right direction. We've got really good news again this week. The Market Demand Index is at 7.42. Load availability across all sectors was up significantly, demand on trucking services. Just now starting to see the pricing leverage shift to the truck side. All indications say that this should continue to strengthen as we move throughout spring and early summer. Load availability was actually up 21% compared to the previous week. Texas, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Georgia, Pennsylvania, California, Michigan, Alabama, and Missouri were the hot regions. Those were the least load availability, Washington, D.C., Rhode Island, Vermont, New Hampshire, Delaware, Connecticut, North Dakota, Mexico, Maine, and Wyoming. truckability was up 14%. So roughly, if you take the 21% load availability was up, subtract out the 14% that truck was up, we're probably, we saw an increase of about 7, which if we continue to see that week over week, we'll be in really good shape in no time. Rates still not strong, but they're at least on, they're on the way up. And the longer we stay above 7 on the index, the higher we will see these rates go. The average equipment rate is up 2 cents to $1.66. Flatbed rates up a penny to $1.50. Specialized rates up 3 cents to $2.01. Van rates up 5 cents to 47. Reefer actually dropped a penny to $1.66. So not great news on rates, but definitely stronger rates. And we should see that continue to climb. And you should be able to negotiate a little stronger every time this index goes up. All right. Let me see. We've got just one question so far. I've got a couple other rates I want to get to. If you've got a question and you're on the phone call, press 1. Lisa will get right to you. If you are listening online and you want to join the call, you've got a question or a topic. If you've just got a topic, a comment, something you want to talk about, you can join us on the phone, 347-884-8327. You can just sit and listen on your phone, or you can jump in and talk to us. There's two different indexes that I follow to get these rates. One is from the Internet Truck Stop. That's the Market Demand Index, which I just went over. Also watch TransCore, which is the DATNet network, and I'll give you a quick rundown of what's going on there. Pretty similar. Spot market load index is up 7%, exactly what we saw over at Internet Truck Stop, and these are two completely different systems. So it's good to see that they're trending together and following each other. If we look at the spot market load index, February over January, up 52%. If we look at February 2010 compared to February of last year, we're up 168% on the spot market load index. That's really significant. If we look at, let's just go through them all. Let's go through the dry van load to truck, up 10% on the week, 51% month over month, 245% year over year. Flat to truck up 13% week over week, up 109% month over month, meaning February of 2010 to January of 2010, up 109%. Year over year, February against February, up 495%. Up 13% for the week, 51% for the month, 238% for the year. Really good news. It, I would like to know if you're seeing it on the street yet. You should be. If you jump in, press 1 and let me know if you're seeing that as far as available loads. Even if you don't negotiate price, jump in and let me know whether or not you're seeing that freight increase. Are you able to find more loads even if you're not negotiating price? Let's get to the phones. Let's go to Jerry to start off. Jerry, welcome to the program.
How are we doing, Kevin?
On your mind?
I got two questions for you. What was that the antifreeze you were talking about a while back, that was a waterless antifreeze, where you could run your engine at a higher temp?
Yeah, it's called Evans is the name of the company, and it's zero water. So when you switch over, there's actually a process that you have to go through. You have to drain everything out. They have a dryer, a chemical you run through the system to dry out any pockets of water, because we've got to get it down to, you know, all zero water. And then it's about $500 to switch to this coolant. But when I started studying coolants or our cooling system, the weak link everywhere in the system is the fact that we have water, and water boils. And even if we with glycol does a great job of keeping water from freezing, but it really doesn't do that great of a job keeping it from boiling. In fact, that's why we have to pressurize the systems. That's why we have to put a pressurized cap on, because when water under pressure, that raises the boiling point. But now we've got a system that's under pressure, and we still get hot spots inside the engine, so we still have boiling going on. We have cavitation, which causes all kinds of damage inside the engine. And this coolant really eliminates all that stuff. It doesn't boil. There's no water. We don't get cavitation. We can run the engine hotter, which is more efficient. And I know everybody gets a little freaked out when we talk about running the engine hotter, but we're actually protecting the engine more at those higher temperatures. And the higher the coolant temperature, the more efficient the radiator becomes.
I thought we need to look at doing that. We hooked the power box back up in this truck, and the temperature comes up pretty quick, jumps about 200 to 210 pretty quick on a warmer day on a pull. So I know, you know, it's not, when it gets hot out, it's going to be an issue.
Yeah, and 210, 215, I mean, we're really pushing the limits of coolant, and I'd like to see the engine at about 220 or 230. The problem is the coolant can't handle it.
Yeah.
So I would definitely look into that. Like I say, it's I think it's about $500 to switch. You can call them directly and find out where you can get it done. I would definitely get it done somewhere that knows what they're doing. I would find a distributor that knows what they're doing and get it done.
Good. Second question. This is it's a company truck. I'm trying to get him switched in. We do a lot of tanker work, probably half the fleet, and we're empty half the time. I'm trying to show him the cost analysis on this. We hook the power box up, and the way I drive, well, first, the way I drive, when I changed the way I drove, it went up a mile to a gallon.
Wow.
Okay. I've talked to you about it before. I've called in before. And we put the power box up, I got 7/10.
Okay.
So I'm trying to talk him into running the steer tires on the back axles, and really don't need, besides this winter and getting out of my farm, I really don't need the power divider.
Is that
so
right?
So I really don't need, you know, we could get by with a pusher axle. I was just trying to get your take on any ideas I could sell this on. I got another one of our guys that's doing the same stuff and running the same miles, and we run more miles than everybody. And we're pretty much trying to push him into trying to at least experiment on two trucks. It's not like he doesn't have the availability to do it. He's got all his own mechanics and everything to do it. So,
well, and it seems like you've already proven to him that, you know, this stuff isn't just off the wall. You know, you're not making it up as you're driving down the road. The stuff you've done has made huge improvements. I mean, when you start calculating
went from 5.3 miles a gallon from before to, on a decent day, month average at 7.34.
Wow. Yeah, that is huge savings.
Your average was 6.64.
Yeah,
so
that's outstanding. And as far as the power divider goes, you know, when you've got a single axle, when we go to a lift axle, as long as you can get it completely off the ground, then the power divider, the reason we need to lock it in is because when you have two different drive axles and you've got that power divider there, the power divider will always send the power to the axle with the least amount of traction. So a tandem axle will tend to get stuck easier than a single until we get in the power divider. But when you've got just a single axle, then it's not necessary. All your power is going to that axle anyway. It's nice to have a locking differential, but it's not necessary. The only thing I could say as far as convincing him is just to go back on what you've already done and how much money it saved. It's proof that what you're talking about is working. So, you know, take a chance. Try something else. Let's go to, I think I'm going to go all the way. Wow, we've got a lot of people online. I'm going to go all the way to the bottom. Let's start there so I can keep track. Let's go to Jim in California. It's your turn. Welcome to the program. Jim, are you with me? Oh, going once. Jim? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put you back on hold. Back on hold. And I'll try to come back to you again in a little bit because I heard somebody there. Let's try Travis. Let me find you again. Travis, North Carolina. Get back to that line. It's Ern. Travis, go ahead.
All right. Can you hear me?
Yep. You sound good. Go ahead.
Okay. Two things. I've been working in the dispatch office because my brand new 2011 Cascadia with 3,000 miles on it is in the shop all torn down. They have this just on Saturday, this past Saturday alone, we had to actually service failure 150 loads because we didn't have enough trucks to pull them. And we're based out of Pennsylvania.
How big of a carrier are you?
1,500 plus.
1,500 trucks, and you guys pass up on 10%. That's huge.
Yeah, because we just didn't have enough
wow.
trucks to pull them. And, I mean, the guys wow. that went home on weekends were forced to stay out. And, I mean, they had pretty much the guy, unless you were on, like, vacation or couldn't get a hold of you, you were running.
Wow, so what we're seeing on the boards is really translating already to the streets then. That's a lot of freight.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, we haul a lot of paper, a lot of Procter & Gamble, stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of it is out of Pennsylvania, Ohio. I mean, we only work east of I-35, so kind of in that whole area you were talking about is where we run. And that was just
right.
Saturday. I don't
right.
know what happened on Sunday.
Wow. Well, that's certainly good news. I mean, you know, we've been watching the index just kind of bounce bottom and struggle for a long time. And then we started a slow climb, and now we're on a pretty steep climb. Just out of nowhere in the last month, the freight seems to really be taking off.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to ask you with that, like I said, I got a 2011 Cascadia with a DD15 in it. I've
okay.
made it 3,000 miles, well, not even quite, 2,500 and some odd miles, and it's started like you know, like with the automatic transmissions, like in between gears, it's got kind of a lag when it shifts. This one's a
yeah.
manual, and it was doing it. And then I pulled over, got fuel, went to take back off again. My oil pressure went from 20 pounds at an idle up to about 90 pounds, which I knew was wrong for Detroit. So I let it sit, let the oil drain back down, because you got to wait like 15 minutes to get the proper thing on the stick. And it burned 3.5 gallons of oil from when I started in the morning, which was only 300 miles ago, and took it into Detroit, and they had to, crankcase pressures were all off, ejector pressures were all off, and now they got it torn down pretty much like they're doing an in-frame, and they still can't figure out what's wrong with it.
Yeah, somebody put that engine together wrong. Something went way wrong internally.
Hey, you haven't heard anything of other guys having any problems like that?
That's the first time.
First time, yeah, because it had no power and getting like 4 miles a gallon. I mean, I was heavy, but still, 4 miles a gallon is horrible.
No, something way wrong with that. It sounds like they're going to end up, You know, the rings, it's possible the rings didn't seat, but it also seems like there's a lot more going on than just that.
Yeah, they have no idea. This is the first one they've torn down, and they actually had to get a tool shipped in from Mexico.
Yeah, well, you know, and the other thing is, you know, the top end of that engine is so different and new. The fuel system's very different. I still have a lot to learn about some of the internal workings, but obviously something went way wrong on that one.
Yeah, that's part of the problem. They said my injector pressure was ranging between 60 to 99 pounds, you know, across. They wouldn't even stay to the same pressure.
Right. Yeah, and that's got a, like I say, that has a very unique fuel rail system up top. I'm going to do some more studying on it, but I'd almost like to go to the go take a course on that engine. But that's the first time I've heard that. I mean, they've been pretty solid so far, but this one sounds like there's something really wrong with that one. Let's see. Let's go to Virginia. Shelton, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you. Can you hear
you're
me?
You're welcome. What's on your mind? Yep, you sound good. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to let you know that I'm a company driver, and this is probably about the first week since probably October that I've actually run out of hours to run because our company gets a lot of loads from spot market, and it seems like it really picked up this week for some reason.
But yeah, everything that I'm looking at definitely indicates that there is a lot of freight available, much more than just a couple weeks ago. And from, you know, the first couple calls here tonight, obviously that's the case on the street too.
Oh yeah, I can tell. I'm just glad to get the miles finally because there was a lot of sitting around, you know.
Well, and that's the good thing. You know, I don't go over the rates just for people who are able to negotiate rates. It's obviously important for them to know that they now have more negotiation power and to pay attention to it. But this applies to all of us. I mean, we whether we are an owner-operator with our own authority, an owner-operator on a mileage contract or a percentage contract, or a driver, all of us benefit when there's a lot more freight. We have, you know, more work to do no matter how we get paid.
Oh, yeah, it's just great for the company drivers, too, just to be able to have more freight so we keep rolling, you know?
Absolutely. Keep rolling and have more options sometimes on where you roll. You know, before we were just taking anything you could. You know what? Did I take this call yet? I'm getting confused already. Jeremy, did I talk to you already?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought so. I'm not sure why I didn't mark that one. I'm going to move along then. Let's go to Matt in Wisconsin. Matt, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Kevin.
Good afternoon. Good. What's up?
Well, you know, when did I stop in and see you last? It was like the first week of February.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it was the week before Valentine's. I loaded a load of cut flowers that day after
That's
I met
right.
you. I haven't really had a day off since.
My freight
has just been nuts and so bad. I did something this week I haven't done in 8 years.
What did you do?
I hired a driver.
Did you really?
Yep, I got to start running team just to keep up with everything that's going on.
Wow, what an amazing change. I mean,
this is just
wild. I've been watching the indexes, and I've been thinking, well, you know, every now and then they spike like that. And I kept thinking, this is just a spike. You know, we're not going to come up, you know, this fast. And we still might not. I mean, this still might drop off, but all the indications are that this should stay pretty strong for a while.
Well, yeah, I mean, my freight, you know, it's busy through the spring here. But normally March is not that busy of a month. The end of February and the beginning of March usually isn't. So that's why I just, you know, it's a kind of a temporary situation through the spring season here. But for everything I can see building up here. It's going to be a great spring.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we would expect that the rest of the month will be really strong. You know, we always know that the end of the month and the end of the quarter are good. January, February, March, so, you know, the next 2 to 3 weeks should be really strong, the end of the month and the end of the quarter, and we started strong. So, boy, it'd be nice to see this index get up around the 8 or 9 mark. We haven't been there in 2.5 years. That would be nice.
Yeah, well, everything I do is pretty much under contract, so it ain't going to affect
right.
my rate for, you know, till the rest of the industry is driving rates up, then I'll be able to negotiate higher rates for myself, too. But it's as of right now, it's looking good for this year.
Yeah, even though it's, you know, you're under contract, so it's not affecting your rate, but it's certainly affecting your miles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I already got a load lined up for next week coming home, so it's, I mean, there's no more stress. The stress is now the opposite way. It's how to make sure I get everything covered.
Yeah,
instead of
that's
worrying
exactly
about
right.
covering the driver.
Wow. So you're going to be teaming for a while, huh?
Yeah, that's the plan for now, to try it out and see how that goes.
Well, you know, that's a great idea. Take advantage of the freight while it's there.
Might even have to buy another truck.
There you go. I mean, they're certainly cheap.
Yeah, well, I got a feeling there might be something I'd be interested in at this truck show coming up.
Oh, yeah, that's true. What about a trailer?
That I don't know yet. I got to take another step to do that.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You just can't find it. You're what you need sitting on the corner, right?
No, yeah, I'm somewhat specialized, so.
Yeah. Huh. Well, it's interesting. I mean, certainly everybody we've talked to tonight says, yeah, absolutely. What's going on the indexes is what's going on the street.
Well, you know, we could say that, you know, the stimulus packages and Obama are, you know, he's doing his job. But We can talk about that tomorrow night.
Hey, speaking
of tomorrow night. Yep, go ahead.
Speaking of tomorrow night, I realized sometime last week we started looking at our schedule and the truck show's coming up. We've got a grand opening coming up, and I'm not going to tell you what the grand opening is. We've got a lot going on. Summertime's always busy. We've got, you know, 3 truck shows, CMC. We've got your pig roast. We're looking at the schedule. And I got thinking, have any time to take any days off. And we moved down to Florida in October, and we've only taken 2 days off since October. So it's kind of last minute. I said, you know what?
Saturday.
Yeah, I said, you know what? Let's just get out of here. So Sunday night we were down in the Keys. We had a great couple days down there. Now we're doing the show remote tonight. We're in where are we? I think we're in Naples. We came across and then we're gonna head from Naples back up tomorrow. But because of a couple unexpected days off, I'm not real prepared for my shows this week. So give me a couple ideas. Help me out here. What would be a good topic for the pit tomorrow night?
Oh, well, for some reason, the topic that me and you like, it doesn't seem to drum up that much calls. I mean, I thought last week the healthcare, just the phone lines would have been lit up, but
I was all prepared last week to extend that show to 2 hours to take all the calls. Not
mm-hmm.
that I could, but I thought for sure that I would be cutting people off at the end of the show, and I was prepared to extend it, you know, 15 or 20 minutes and run it right into the live. But, you know, the only people that wanted to talk all agreed. I mean, you can't sit around and agree all night. It's kind of boring.
Just the usual callers that have, you know, all of us great minds that think alike, you know.
That's right.
So the other comment I was going to make, as far as this good luck with the business, it must all just be pure luck. It couldn't because of, the decisions I've made over the last 15 years and the hard work I've put in.
No, that's right. It's just luck. Because that's what somebody told me on the somebody told me that on the forums. I was talking about how well my business was going, and they said, and they said something about that I was very fortunate. I went in and, kind of said what you just said. Oh, you mean it has nothing to do with 20 years of hard work, good decisions, learning from my mistakes, because I've certainly made enough of those. And the next comment was along the lines of, well, there are a lot of other people who have worked hard for 20 years, and they haven't been lucky.
Well, I can't think of who made this quote, but Dave Ramsey uses it a lot. And some of the most successful people are the people that are standing on the biggest pile of mistakes. Because, when you make a mistake, you learn from it, and that builds you up higher. And there's a lot of truth to that.
That it is absolutely true, and I think the secret is not being afraid to make the mistake and screw up. We don't like to screw up. We don't like to make mistakes. But when I finally got to the point where I said, if I make a mistake and everybody knows about it, so what? Because every time I make a mistake, I learn something.
There's so many things in this world that everybody tells you not to do. And almost everybody has to try it and learn the hard way. But it's learning the lesson and building on from there is what, that's the lesson you learn, is what not to do, and, keep trying something different until you find what works for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it works for me. And I started when I got the radio show 3 years ago and then the website. And I started to get, I don't know what the right word is. I was hesitant to try things for a while because I thought, well, now, if I make a mistake, everybody's going to know. I'm on the radio. I've got the website. Should I just start to play it safe? But I'm not going to. I'm going to continue doing the things I've always done, trying new things and stretching a little bit. And if I screw up, I'll learn something from it.
Yeah, well, one of the other conversations we've had a lot of lately is LG and the fuel. And that whole LGX product, I read through that, and I kind of thought it was neat, and I thought you had an upper hand advantage because Detroit right there in Orlando is kind of a distributor, or they use it. Maybe I'll talk to some people, but you got to hesitate when products like that claim fuel mileage. It might be a good product for LG, but as far as improving fuel mileage, there's no physical thing that could affect it.
Yeah, see, that's what bothers about it. If somebody's having a real algae problem and this will eliminate it and stop it from ever coming back, that kind of made sense. But when they started talking about the whole magnet thing and then all these fuel mileage increases because they're changing molecular structure of the fuel, I've seen all those products. The magnetic thing, they've been on the market for years, and they don't do a thing.
Well, it's like a fuel additive.
Yeah.
They're good at emptying your wallet. That's what they are good at.
Yeah, so then the whole thing becomes, well, if they're going to talk about these magnets and all this fuel mileage, does this thing even work at all? I mean, do I even want to buy it to solve an algae problem?
Yeah. Well,
and speaking of fuel, were you listening the other night? Somebody called with a cat. This was on the live show. And they had been getting fuel in the ample. And they had taken it to CAT. CAT had tore the engine apart. They did dye tests. They checked all the injectors, and they said there's no fuel leaks anywhere. Did you hear the call?
Boy, it's not ringing a bell. You broke up. You said fuel in the oil?
Yeah, fuel in the oil, and Cat tore it apart, and they just couldn't find. They said there are no leaks in this engine.
No, I guess
and I don't
remember it, but.
Okay. I kept saying, look, if there is fuel in the oil, it has to be coming from somewhere. There has to be a leak.
Yeah.
And they, so I looked at their sample, and then they took it, they had Cat do a sample, and they had another lab do a sample. And the other two labs, now maybe it was just Cat. It was just Cat. And Cat kept saying, look, we're doing a sample, and there's no fuel in this oil. We're not detecting any fuel in the oil. But I look at the viscosity, which is the other test, and on both samples, the viscosity was low, down in the 12s. So I said, you know, when you get fuel in the oil, your viscosity goes down. It's about the only thing that will reduce viscosity. If you get water in the fuel, it starts to conglomerate and it collects soot, and your viscosity actually goes up when you get water glycol in. When you get fuel in, it dilutes the fuel, your viscosity goes down. And I said, Cat's sample is saying that there's no fuel, but they're showing a low viscosity. It isn't making any sense. So turns out, I did some more digging, and I'll probably talk about this tomorrow night on the live show. The test that Cat uses and a lot of the other labs, they use a test called like a fuel sniffer test. And they're actually looking for the vapor and the fume. And the Polaris lab uses a gas chromatography, which is a whole different test. It's much more expensive to test for fuel. It turns out that the other test, the sniffer, and there's some other test, and I forget what it is, GFIR, I think, those are fine unless you're using ultra-low sulfur or biodiesel and then detect the fuel.
Imagine that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I've kind of always been a Cat person, and I don't know anymore. I've very rarely ever used their sampling system. But way back, like 10 years ago, they didn't even test for glycol in the oil sample.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, we were always using an independent oil sample, you know, when we did ours, because just, you know, head gasket, anything, your Cat oil sample would not pick it up.
Well, now it looks like, you know, ultra-low sulfur or biodiesel, they can't pick up a fuel dilution. But here's what really gets me, is they had the engine apart and they can't find it either, but we absolutely know that there's fuel there. And it's in the 4 and 5%, which is pretty significant.
Yeah, that would be pretty obvious, I would think, if you're getting that high of a percentage.
So, you know, when he called, I was just at a loss because I kept saying, look, every time I've seen fuel in the oil, it's there and we find the reason why. And Cat's telling you that there's no leak when they physically take it apart, and then they're backing that up saying that their sample is showing no leak, but it's got dilution because the viscosity is down. I said, why don't you try a third lab just as a tiebreaker? And in the meantime, I'll go check. But this kind of lays it out. I found all the guidelines on this and everything, bulletins. Even Cat has a bulletin that says their testing procedure can't detect ultra-low sulfur or biodiesel.
Huh. That's new on me, and that's good information.
Yeah, it was definitely new on me. And the for sure, the Speedco testing can't detect biodiesel or ultra-low sulfur.
Well,
which, I mean,
a lot of things I don't think they can detect. But
that's true.
That's just opinion, I think.
I agree. Those don't work so well.
Alrighty.
All right. So, have you come up with anything for me for tomorrow night then?
Well, as, I don't know how much this relates to politics, but a lot of the things with ethics, I guess it's all politics, but you know, all the different people that are resigning and saying they're not going to rerun, and just the whole movement with the Tea Party, to me, is interesting. And, you know, the problem with what they call the Tea Party, or I should say the movement, it's so diverse yet. You know, there's really no defined reason behind it.
You're right.
I mean, it's a lot like the goal. I mean, that's one idea that almost falls in the same, you know, everybody wants to do something, but there's so many different ideas from so many different directions.
Yeah,
maybe,
I know.
Maybe we could try with some ideas of, you know, between GO and the Tea Parties and what some of our main objectives should be for this upcoming election.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Maybe I'll work on that. Hey, speaking of politics and something I need to work on, I was, like I said, we've been traveling and I haven't been reading. I've been trying to stay away from the computer because I just needed to relax for a bit. We've been hard. But I was watching, when I was having breakfast this morning, I just happened to catch a quick blip on the news, and they were talking about, this doesn't have anything to do with the trucking, it's just more government. They were talking about new government regulations on airline delays. And I guess the government,
yep.
Did you hear this? What are the details? The government's going to start fining the airlines?
Yeah, I haven't heard a whole lot, but I mean, boy, consumers are really going to get screwed on this. It could be up to a $30,000 fine per passenger. Well,
what?
I mean, how long is it going to take an airline to, you know, make sure that this doesn't happen? Both American Airlines and, I don't remember the other major one now, announced they're just going to start canceling flights.
It was Continental.
So now instead of going to the airport and worrying about a delay, you're just going to get canceled because they can't afford a delay. They'll get fined.
Absolutely. Just cancel it. It will make more sense.
Yep.
And here's the thing. I there was a time, I don't much anymore, but there was a time when I used to fly roughly 30 to 40 times a year. I was flying at least three times a month, and several months I would fly four times a month. So I was flying 30 sometimes a year. Well, anybody who travels a lot, that you know which airlines are worse for delays. Like when I flew out of Orlando, I finally just gave up on completely, and I gave Delta because they were late all the time. Well, I started flying Southwest, and you know what? I didn't even care about the price because it doesn't matter if you save a couple hundred bucks even. If you missed a radio show because your plane was late, it doesn't matter how much money you save. So I just stopped flying those two airlines because they were late all the time, and I flew Southwest. Isn't that the way the market's supposed to work?
It's amazing, you know. I had to do some research on Southwest because I've heard a lot of different stories about them, and that's a pretty amazing company.
They are one of those companies that I put in a select group, and I like, you know how crazy I get about Apple and Mac. You know how much I respect that. Southwest was the same way for me, and there were people who hate Southwest. And
I'll never fly that
airline. Right.
They get the most negative, you know, because they're the low price, you know, and all this and that, but their service is actually.
Yep, they were very, very efficient, very, very customer friendly. And you know, they got to, and they're really not the low price anymore. I mean, when I used to be able to find lower prices on other airlines, and I wouldn't fly them because of delays. But that's how the free market is supposed to work. I cannot believe the government is going to step in and screw this up because the consumer will lose. The airlines will just cancel flights instead of paying those fines. Unbelievable. Let's go to Canada this time. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks. How you doing?
I'm doing good tonight. What's up?
A couple of things. Your call there with the oil guy and the fuel and the oil, that just aired last night. I was listening to that one last night on the replay.
What? You're kidding me.
No.
Was it a repeat, or was that the first time that it was on the air?
That's the first time I've heard it.
Okay, because we're actually...
Last night or Monday night? It was Monday night or Tuesday night when you're on your replay. Well, just, yeah. So I think, I'm pretty sure it was last night or Monday night.
Because
I listened to the call, and I was totally amazed that they couldn't find this.
Well, that's what I thought. And then when he said they took another sample and there's no fuel, I thought, that's just not possible. You know, you might get a false negative, but it's pretty tough to get a false positive on fuel.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I kept thinking, you know, what am I missing here? And then when I checked viscosity was low. That's a clear indication you've got fuel, and yet Cat's telling him, no, not even in the sample. There's no fuel in there.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of making me crazy.
I felt so sorry for him. Like, he's between a rock and a hard place. And then just a little comment on your airlines. I was a part of Plata 2 weeks ago when you had the big snow out in the East Coast. Well, two couples from New York City flying Continental, their flight got canceled. They got stuck in the Dominican for an extra week at their own expense. Continental would not get them out any sooner, and if they wanted a flight out sooner, they're going to have to pay $350 American apiece.
Wow.
Being Canadian, like, we always fly down on charters. If our flight is canceled, it's rescheduled for the next day, and the charter airline will actually put you up at a hotel. Continental told
right.
them, sorry, too bad. Our next flight out will be next Thursday. You're on your own until then. Have a good trip.
Well, you know, as far as all the major airlines that I'm aware of, if the delay is weather-related or if the cancellation is weather-related, none of them pay expenses. But most places, you're going to get another within a day or two. I mean, 2 days would be an extreme. And, you know, but I guess out of the Dominican Republic, there's just not a lot of flights coming out. So,
That's where you're better off going with the charter, because they will reschedule it for as soon as the airport's clear.
Right, right. And that makes sense. But you know what? We don't need the government getting in and screwing this one up.
No, not at all. I mean, my ex was in the airline industry for years. I've flown all over the world hundreds of times, and it's just getting worse. It's not getting any better.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess two of the main reasons I called those. One, you were talking the other night, last week, about the CVSA 2010 and how it has no teeth in it. Up here in Ontario, we've got virtually the same program, CVOR points, Commercial Vehicle Operators Report. And once a company gets too many points, period, it doesn't matter whether it's mechanical or what, they'll be called in for an audit. If they keep on going, they will have their license pulled. We have teeth in our regulation with that, and it's working very well.
See, I'm not sure. Maybe I just missed it, and it's, you know, typical government, I can't even call it double speak. It was triple speak. I mean, it gave me a headache just trying to read it, because I'm not exaggerating. There were 31 acronyms. And I even had a cheat sheet. I had this whole list of acronyms, because you'd try to read a paragraph and it would say, you know, the FYCSB refers back to the DWX, and you can't read it because you don't know what that acronym is, so you have to keep going back to look to see what the acronym was. So it was making me crazy reading it, but I thought I did a pretty thorough job, and I couldn't find where this would – they did talk about audits. When you got to a certain point, they would come in, they would audit, they would try to solve the problem. But I didn't really see the compliance that I thought, and it doesn't sound like it's got the same kind of teeth that yours does.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've already taken some companies up here out of business. They pulled their CVORs. Other companies have had their fleet size reduced, saying, okay, well, you know, as punishment, You've got 100 power units. We're pulling the license on 50 for a couple of months. There's that actual teeth in it, and it is working to help clean up the bad actors out here. There's still some that you look at, and like IFS, I mean, every night you look at there's one of their trucks in the ditch, and they're still out here, but I think for the most part it is working to a degree to help clean up the industry and get those bad actors and the bad trucks off the road.
Well, you know, and you know me, I'm just not a fan of government intervention, but I do think that there is a place for in highway safety. I mean, because the one government is supposed to do, at least in this country, the government is supposed to be there to protect us from each other, not to protect us from ourselves. I mean, I should have the freedom to do whatever I want to myself as long as I'm not hurting somebody else. But when it comes to safety, that's an issue, because if I'm, you know, out on a public highway and I'm not safe, then I'm a danger to somebody else. So I'm okay, but it just seems like we keep growing these programs and not solving any of the problems.
Well, I don't even see the point of having a program as the way you've, like, I haven't researched, I've just listened to what you've been saying on it, and it just doesn't make any sense. Okay, they're going to come in, they're going to do an intervention, but if that's all they're going to do, you know, 2 weeks later, the company's going to go back to doing the same thing. There's absolutely no reason for them not to. Oh, wow, we're going to get an audit. Big deal. We'll tell them what they want to hear. We'll go back to doing what we're going to doing.
Well, and it almost seems like that it's what's the word I want to use? It's under our current system, if you stop, they come in and audit you already. But when they come in now, they look at everything. So you've got to worry about everything. You've got to worry about mechanical. You've got to worry about hours of service. Whereas under the new system, screw up mechanical, they're not even going to look at your hours of service.
No, it just doesn't make any sense. From the sounds of it, it's out there to make it look good in the public eye to say, hey, we're doing something. But there's, you know, as you said, there's no teeth to it. But and that brings me into my other point with the electronic onboard recorders. I think they're a good thing. I think it's something the industry probably should have gone to a long time ago, and I think it's going to end up that for a long time I've been saying this industry is behind the times and we shouldn't be charging by the mile anymore. We should be charging by the hour, just like gravel haulers do, crane operators, any heavy equipment like that. You go to a construction site, you're leasing that equipment by the hour. You know, 30, 40 years ago, we didn't have traffic jams. We didn't have the delays at shippers that we do now. So now,
right.
You know, you've got an owner-operator that says, yeah, I'm going to pull this load for $1 a mile, and it gets into New York City and gets stuck in a backup for 6 hours.
Right.
Where now, with you know, and before, electronic onboard recorders, okay, well, we'll fudge the logbook, we'll say we went to bed here. You're not going to be able to do that anymore, and I don't know. I'd like to know how you feel about it. If it would be a positive thing in the industry to go and say, okay, well, we're going to start pulling these loads by the hour and start being paid for the hours we work. Like you look at an airline pilot, they get paid for the hours they work, and yet here are the truckers out there working for free half the time.
This is probably one issue that I have the toughest time taking a stance on. As far as me personally, and you know, to me it's almost a non with my trucks because it's just not going to matter. But even if me speaking personally, if I owned a truck and I went back over the road and I was driving, I really wouldn't care one way or the other. I would make it work, you know, one way or the other. But when I think about it, and I've thought about it a couple times, and I've tried to think, you know, don't straddle the fence on this. Where do I really stand? And I have a tough time with this issue. On one hand, I don't like the government intrusion, feeling like they're looking over our shoulder. On the other hand, I tend to lean towards, look, if we have these rules, then we have a way to enforce the rules. And right now, we really don't. I mean, it's either going, you know, because we've cheated on our logbooks forever. They're a joke. So, you know, if we're going to have the rules, maybe we should have a way to enforce them. And if everybody has to go to the rule, then the rules finally start to make some sense, and it should drive rates up. Because if nobody can cheat, now we're not going to have as much capacity, because we know right now virtually almost everybody cheats. So we're creating additional capacity, because we're driving more than we're legally allowed to. So if you enforce it, absolutely enforce it electronically, then rates have to go up. We won't have as much capacity anymore.
But still being paid by the mile, you can't quote a rate. You don't know what's going to happen the next day. You know, if you're going to get caught in that six-hour backup for 2 days or a snowstorm or an accident, you know, just start saying the shippers, okay, this is what it takes to run this load. You know, and then this would include waiting time and everything else. We're gonna, I'm gonna charge $75 an hour to pull your load, and it should be there in this time, without any delays. If there's any delays, the shipper should be paying for them. Like, why are truck drivers still willing to work for free? I work by the hour. With Purolator, same as FedEx. We're by the hour.
Right.
I'll get into a traffic jam, sit there for 2 hours.
Well, one of the things that will happen, I don't see everybody switching over to hourly, but one of the things that will happen is that the rates will reflect it either way. Because if all that time now has to be recorded and will be recorded, then rates will go up because the capacity won't be there. Hourly would be nice. I just don't see it happening. Let me try this one again. Jim in California, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, I just have a quick question. I'm a company driver, and I have an ISX in the truck I have now. And my question for you is, I don't know if they're going to or not, but I heard they might go with the ISM this time. So I went on to Cummins' website, and I was looking there, and obviously it was on IXS. ISX low side and ISM high side, but they had an engine that was rated the same power with both of them. And my question for you, are those two engines going to run the same or not? Are they going to run different?
They're going to run different. Anytime you take a smaller engine and you crank it up to its limit, it's going to run much different than taking a bigger engine and cranking it down, ratcheting it down to its lowest limit. The ISM, yeah. Is this in an over-the-road operation?
Yeah, over the road, up and down I-5.
Yeah, I think the ISM is a mistake. It's too small.
Well, I mean, I know why they would do it if they did it, because of weight. But, yeah, again, I'm a company driver, and I don't know if they'll do it or not, but I heard that they might do, and I'm...
What is the max torque and horsepower on the ISM? Maybe they've uprated that engine some, because you're talking about new trucks, right?
Yeah, and I did look, and I did do that. The horsepower is rated the same, but I did make sure to look at the torque, and they were rated the same, too.
How much is it? What is it? What's the max out of that?
Oh, Kevin, I think it was like 1550 or 1600.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I like smaller engines. I always have, but I've just never been a big fan of the ISM. I'd have to take a look at it again for 2010. But for now, we're all out of time. I want to thank everybody for joining me. And tune in tomorrow night, same time, 10:30. For the Pit at Politics and Trucking, I'll send out an email tomorrow with the whatever the topic is going to be. Same phone number tomorrow night for this show, 347-884-8327. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. Something good. In fact, if you're not a member of the website, by all means, go over and join. That's where we keep everybody updated. If you've got any questions about the upcoming CMC, or if you'd like the DVD, we did just release the Signature Truck DVD. That phone number is 407-374. 9275. If you've left a message in the last couple of days, be patient. Lisa and I both needed a couple of days off, so thanks for joining me. I'm all out of time. Good night, everyone. Be safe, be profitable, master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. What's that?
Did you lose your mind?